For What's Universe at Times, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. In Ecuador, rescue and recovery operations are underway under the direction of President Rafael Correa following Saturday's powerful 7.8 magnitude earthquake. The death toll is above 270, with hundreds known injured, along with widespread devastation along the country's Pacific coast. The quake struck the hardest in Ecuador's tourist city of Pertinalis. Gabriela Benitez, a World Vision spokeswoman in the capital, Quito, said relief groups like hers are trying to meet the immediate needs.
Right now, we are trying to satisfy the basic needs of the people, which is, for example, bottled water, also medicines, because the hospitals are full of people which are sick and which have cuts because of all the things that have been falling down because of the earthquake.
At least two Canadians are known among the dead. President Correa said it's the worst quake to affect Ecuador since 1979. Japan is also in rescue and relief mode following two earthquakes that struck the country's southwest within 48 hours of each other Thursday and Saturday, leaving more than 40 dead, hundreds injured. Dozens are believed trapped or buried under collapsed structures in Kumamoto Prefecture. Jeff Kingston is an Asia Studies professor at Tokyo's Temple University.
They usually say that people who are caught under collapsed structures, buildings, have about 72 hours. And so they are desperately scrambling to try to find survivors who, you know, might be, you know, under the roofs of their collapsed houses and under crushed buildings.
The historic Azo Shrine, more than 1,700 years old, was damaged. Part of a wall of the 400-year-old Kumamoto Castle collapsed. This is VOA News. Lawmakers in Brazil voted Sunday to impeach President Dilma Rousseff, the lower house reaching the two-thirds majority needed to send the motion to the Senate for a possible trial. There, Ms. Rousseff would face another vote that could oust her halfway through her second term. Sean Burgess, a Latin American scholar at Australian National University, says this is only the second time a Brazilian leader has been impeached.
And it's not entirely clear how strong the legality of it was, but what is clear is that there's been a statement made that the Congress has the power to impeach the president. Now, this, of course, doesn't mean that she's out of office, but the Chamber of Deputies has made a pretty strong statement.
Fernando Collor de Mello, embroiled in scandal, was impeached in 1992. He resigned rather than face a Senate trial. Opposition to Ms. Rousseff has increased in recent months, with accusations surfacing of unscrupulous and illegal accounting practices to cover government shortfalls during her 2014 re-election campaign. She's denied any wrongdoing. The price of oil has plummeted in Asia after world oil producers Sunday failed to agree on a production freeze at a summit in Qatar. Ministers from 18 OPEC and non-OPEC producers were looking for a deal to cap production at January levels to stabilize the price of oil. UN Special Envoy Martin Kobler says the United Nations and its staff are back in Libya for good.
I'm not visiting Tripoli anymore. I'm working out of Tripoli. The United Nations are back in Tripoli. We will be here every day to work together with you for the benefit of the people of Libya.
The UN left in 2014 after the North African country descended into chaos following a NATO-backed uprising that ousted longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi. As early as Monday, the internationally recognized Eastern Libya administration is to vote on the UN-backed unity government that arrived last month in Tripoli. A rights group monitoring the violence in Syria says at least 16 people, including 10 children, were killed in rebel shelling in Syria's largest Aleppo Sunday. Six more were killed as a result of airstrikes. South Korea's President Park Geun-hye acknowledges all signs in North Korea point to a fifth nuclear test despite international prohibition. Sunday, the South Korean news agency said it learned from various government sources activities at the North's nuclear test site has increased 2 to 3-fold recently. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called for an investigation into the deaths of Gambian opposition activist Solo Sandeng and two other members of his United Democratic Party who were held in detention. Mr. Ban said he learned with dismay of the deaths after members of the opposition were arrested Thursday for taking part in a peaceful protest in the capital. The rights groups have accused the government of rights abuses. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, April 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar is expected to return to Juba today, Monday.
The arrival of the first vice president designate actually is a milestone in the implementation of the agreement because with his coming and the transitional government of national unity will be established.
Michael Makuei is South Sudan's information minister. Meanwhile, the government denies its security forces have been arbitrarily arresting and detaining people. Mozambicans seeking asylum in Malawi are being moved from the dangerous border area. And Gambia defends the arrest of opposition leaders and their supporters.
In the Gambia, just like in any other country, there is something called the Public Order Act, which for these processions, street protests, meetings, and so forth, without speaking and being granted permit by the police.
Sherry Bojan is Gambia's information minister. We'll also get the view of the Gambian diaspora. And some economists say global health funding is becoming scarce. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan rebel leader and first vice president-designate Riek Machar is expected to return to Juba today, Monday. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei says Machar's return is a milestone in the implementation of the peace agreement signed last year between Machar and President Salva Kiir. Makuei says Mr. Machar will be inaugurated as the country's first vice president immediately following his arrival, marking the beginning of a 30-month transitional period.
Vice President designate Dr. Riek Machar will be arriving this morning when his arrival will be received by the Vice President at Juba International Airport. He will be accorded the necessary official reception, stays, and diplomatic calls, which are here in Juba. And after that, he will go to the palace where he will go and take oath. And after that, the president will have a meeting with his two vice presidents so that they discuss the establishment of the transitional government of national unity.
The people of South Sudan have been yearning for this day. What do you think this arrival means for peace, lasting peace in South Sudan?
Well, the arrival of the first vice president designate actually is a milestone in the implementation of the agreement. Because with his coming and the transitional government of national unity will be established. In other words, this will mark the beginning of the transitional period of 30 months.
There are some who have talked about, Mr. Minister, a trust deficit. You have been enemies on battlefields. Can you say to the people of South Sudan and the international community that there will be trust between the two sides to move the country forward?
Well, of course, the government and the people of South Sudan have been yearning for this day because people have come to know that, after all, war does not help anything. It is destructive. So everybody has been yearning for peace. And the confidence, of course, which was lost will be built again. I'm optimistic that this lost confidence will be regained and people will move forward in the implementation of the agreement so that people can enjoy the peace that they badly needed.
You talked about the first vice president being sworn in immediately. There was a disagreement prior to him coming that your government did not want the swearing-in to take place immediately today, Monday. What brought about the change of mind?
Well, the change of mind came as a result of a request from the chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, who pleaded to the president and requested that Riek Machar should be given the opportunity to take oath the same day of his arrival. So the president, in consideration of the request, accepted the request and decided that, yes, he can take oath the same day.
Minister, there's another group that are responsible for foreign affairs. These are the former detainees. I'm just wondering, how are you guys going to work together?
Well, of course, we will work together. Like, when we work together, after all, this is not the first time for us to enter into peace. We entered peace with the government of Sudan. We signed the CPA in 2005. And we worked together up to our independence in 2011. So there is nothing new. Even though we were enemies, we were fighting, we were on the neck of one another. But with peace, definitely there will be change of mind, there will be change of everything, and confidence will have to be built.
Michael Marquis, South Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Meanwhile, the South Sudan government has denied a report by Amnesty International which accuses the country's security forces of arbitrarily arresting and detaining more than 30 people without legal representation. Wake Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
The 9-page report says 35 men have been unlawfully detained by South Sudan's National Security Service operatives. Elizabeth Asamo-Deng, a researcher with Amnesty International, says her organization has confirmed through multiple reliable sources that the men were arrested and detained in Juba but have not been charged with any crime.
So these men have been detained by national security without charge. They have no access to lawyers. Some of them do not have access to family members. In fact, wives, cousins, uncles have tried to visit some of their relatives in national security 2, 3, 4 times and have been repeatedly turned away by national security officers.
Deng says none of the men have been charged with a crime or have appeared in court. Amnesty International believes several others are being detained within other National Security Service facilities. Deng says South Sudan's military has also engaged in arbitrary detentions. The report identifies the men and provides the dates of their arrests. Among the detainees are the former governor of former Western Equatoria State, Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, and University of Juba professor Leonzio Angole Onek. South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwey flatly denies any arbitrary arrests or detentions by the government and calls the report biased.
If there is anybody under detention, he is under detention because he has charges against him. We have no political detainees here to say that we are detaining people without charges.
Deng says most of the detainees were arrested in connection with the two-year conflict. She says the detentions violate South Sudan laws and international laws. The agreement on the resolution of the crisis in South Sudan requires the parties to the conflict to ensure the immediate and unconditional release of all those detained in connection with the conflict. The South Sudan National Security Act requires the security operatives to produce detainees in court within 24 hours of their detention. Deng says clearly that has not happened.
We are calling for the National Security Service, in cooperation with the government, with the Ministry of Justice and with the judiciary, to ensure that all detainees are either released immediately and unconditionally from detention, or that they are immediately charged by a government prosecutor, brought before court.
And Deng says the court shall decide whether or not they should be released on bail or remanded to a normal prison. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Today's Monday, April 18th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 13 and a half minutes past the hour. The Gambian government is defending the arrest of several opposition leaders and their supporters. This as the UN Secretary General has called for the immediate and unconditional release of those arrested. The United States has also condemned what it calls the Gambian government's severe response to recent peaceful protests. Gambian security forces Saturday arrested Usainu Dabo, leader of the country's main opposition United Democratic Party, the UDP, and some of his supporters. There are also reports that Solo Sandeng, the party's national organizing secretary, had been tortured to death while in police detention. Sherif Bojang, Gambia's information minister, says he knows nothing about anyone being killed, but he said opposition leader Dabo and his supporters broke Gambian law by holding a demonstration without permission from the police.
You know, Mr. Dabo is a veteran lawyer, and he is quite informed that in the Gambia, just like in any other country, there is something called the Public Order Act, which for these processions, street protests, meetings, and so forth, without seeking and being granted permit by the police. But he and his cohorts defied and completely flouted that law. And you know, in the Gambia, like just like in any other country, there are acts and reactions, there are cause and effect. So I don't think they have anyone to blame for their dispersal and subsequent arrest.
Can't the police take them to court? Why arrest them? That's what I'm saying.
They'll be taken to court in due time. You know, the security and maintenance of public order and law is paramount. And the president of the Islamic Republic of the Gambia, His Excellency Sheikh Professor Alhaji Dr. Yahya Ejiajami, has been saying time again that public law and order and security will not be compromised in the Gambia. The Gambia is known for its civility, it's known for its stability, it's known for its tranquility, and no one will be allowed to put a pin in that balloon of tranquility.
Did you really say that Gambia is known for its tranquility? Because the if you talk to the opposition people, they say there's lack of freedom, that people are arrested, just like what happened. Your government is constantly accused of human rights abuses.
Well, you know, the opposition, they'll always have these kind of things to say. Right now in the Gambia, there are newspapers of all shapes and opinions. You buy newspapers on the street and you see the most hard-hitting things being printed against the government. So the Gambia is definitely a free country, although we have issues like any other country. But I think this is a haven of peace. You know, the Gambia is right now on the cusp of great things to come. We have just been given notification that we'll be hosting the 2018 OIC summit. A lot of good things are about to happen to the Gambia. And nobody will be allowed to distract the government of His Excellency, Chief Professor Alhaji Dr. Ejiajami, from developing the Gambia to where he wants it to be.
Mr. Bujang, what can you tell us? Because about the protest, we understand that some people died in police custody. Do you know about that?
No. I don't have any details on that. And just as a follow-up to your last question, they talk about human rights. Last year, the president, without any prompting from anybody, declared more than 320 inmates. So these people were serving jail terms. Some of them were on death row. He granted them general amnesty. What better human right can you get than that? But you never hear these kind of things.
So when do you think Mr. Dabo and the others will be taken to court?
Well, I don't know, but I think as soon as courts open, there will be something, and they will be duly processed, and then they will be taken to court. They will be arraigned.
Are we talking about Monday?
I cannot say that for certainty, but very likely.
Sherry Bojans, Gambia's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Banjul. Gambians in the diaspora are accusing the government of President Yahya Jammeh of violating what they call the fundamental human and constitutional rights of Gambians by attacking what they call peaceful protesters. Past Samba Jao, spokesman for the Democratic Union of Gambian Activists in the Diaspora, said Gambia's constitution guarantees the right to peaceful protest. He challenged the government to produce Solo Sandeng and others believed to have been killed by security forces.
The latest is things are still very confusing. As we speak, the Gambia government cannot still produce the body of Solo Sandeng or any of the other detainees who we feared death, because as we speak, there were reports of two other people along with Solo, that is Ngoy Ndiaye and Fatoumata Jawara, all of the UDP, who feared death or are in coma. And as we speak, lawyer Usainu Dabo, who is the leader of the United Democratic Party, is still in detention in Komijikado because we do not know where he is detained, and the government has not released any such information to show us where he is released. And that is together with 24 people who were arrested yesterday and 13 others who were arrested on the 14th of April when the first batch of protesters, peaceful protesters for electoral reform. And we as Gambians are determined for not only the freedom of these people, but for a full account of everything that had happened and hopefully the beginning of an end to the tyranny that we've been living under for almost 22 years now.
Pasama, let me say, I spoke with the Gambian Minister of Information and he indicated that the opposition people broke the law or did not follow the law. In other words, they should have gotten permission before holding a demonstration.
Well, you know, it is very sad. You call him Minister of Information. We call him the Minister of Misinformation. First of all, let us be very clear. Section 25, subsection 1D of the Gambian Constitution gives every Gambian the right to peacefully protest. So it is absolutely inaccurate to suggest that one needs a permit to protest. But what is important to ask is, what has those people done to warrant the brute force that was used by the government to confront them? Because these are Gambians who, when they are armed with nothing but a placard and ended up with the security coming, firing blank shots at them, firing tear gas at them, and brutalizing them. So the matter here is, if there are any lawbreakers, the lawbreakers are the government and the security forces because they violated the fundamental human and constitutional rights of Gambians by attacking peaceful protesters.
When we spoke to the Minister of Information, he indicated that whether someone was killed or not is being investigated and that those arrested will have to go to court.
Well, you know, James, I wish that we were talking about somebody who was speaking for a credible government. But this is a government that has no credibility. And, of course, what they have to do is to resort to denial. The simple matter here is that if Solo Tsendeng is alive, if Fatoumata Diawara is alive, if Ngoy Ndiaye is alive, all they can do is to parade them before the national TV and let them speak to the Gambian people to tell them that, guess what, we are alive and well.
Pasamba Jao, a spokesman for the Democratic Union of Gambia and activist in the diaspora. He was speaking with me from the U.S. state of Maryland. A major operation got underway last Friday to move thousands of Mozambican asylum seekers in Malawi away from the dangerous border area to a secure camp further inland. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UNHCR, which is running this operation, plans to relocate some 10,000 Mozambican asylum seekers to a former refugee camp in southeast Malawi, about 320 kilometers away from the volatile border area. The camp, which is being reopened for this purpose, previously housed many of the more than 1 million refugees who fled Mozambique's long-running civil war between 1977 and 1992. Mozambicans have been fleeing to Malawi since December of last year because of renewed sporadic fighting between the opposition RENAMO and government forces, peaking at more than 250 people a day in early March. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler tells VOA the situation appears to be stabilizing now, but the border area remains unsafe.
We need to see how it evolves, and in the meantime, we have to move people away from an area where they could be potentially at risk. Also, it will be easier for us to provide assistance to them further inland. I mean, some of these areas are very remote. During the rainy season, the roads are basically impassable, and that's another reason why we are moving them.
A first group of 81 Mozambicans left in Sanje district on two buses early Friday morning. The UN Refugee Agency says they will stay at a transit camp for up to 2 days on arrival. After being transferred to the camp at Luani, it says they will be provided with a plot of land, food, shelter materials, and household items. It says the majority of the Mozambican asylum seekers live in overcrowded conditions in the village of Kapise, an area about 100 kilometers south of the capital, Lilongwe. It says the relocations from Kapise and other villages along the border to Luani will soon begin. The UNHCR says the relocation process will be conducted in a phased manner and should be completed in 6 to 8 weeks. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Global health economists say funding for healthcare services around the world is getting harder and harder to find. The lack of funding is a real threat for people around the world struggling with some of the world's most deadly health issues. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
People wasting away from AIDS or succumbing to malaria may become an increasingly common sight within the next 25 years as funding for universal health care shrivels up. That bleak assessment is suggested in two new reports by Joseph Dielman, an economist at the Institute for Medical Metrics and Evaluation in Seattle, Washington, published in the journal The Lancet. Experts say poor countries are not keeping up funding necessary for universal health care at the same time that international aid continues to stagnate. Currently, donor governments and organizations provide $36 billion a year on health care, according to Dielman, an amount that's continuing to grow but not keeping up to meet healthcare demand. The same is true with spending by low-income countries themselves, which is rising by 4%.
But reality is the spending is already so low that that 4% growth, while it's a increase and it means more resources for health, especially in the low-income settings, it still means a significant gap.
The researchers used previous research that estimated the cost of health care per person in low-income countries would be about $86 per person. Dielman says the poorest countries may fall short of the $86 per person in health care spending projected to be required for essential services in 2040. The crisis could affect 35 low- and moderate-income countries, most of them in sub-Saharan Africa, that carry the greatest burden of disease. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for Daybreak Africa's Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African Sports News, we begin with rugby. Kenya's rugby sevens side, Shujaa, clinched a historic cup final win at the IRB Sevens Series with a convincing 30-7 triumph over Fiji in Singapore on Sunday. South Africa prevailed over Argentina 28-0 in the bronze medal playoff. Consequently, after eight outings in the 10-leg series, South Africa is second on the series standing with 139 points. Kenya is seventh with 85 points, and Zimbabwe is 17th with 1 point. Turning to football, Mozambique beat Tunisia 4-1 to consolidate their lead in Group A at the Africa Futsal Cup of Nations here in Johannesburg, South Africa on Sunday. On Saturday, Morocco outplayed Angola 5-2 to take the lead in Group B as Egypt and Libya drew 0-0. On Friday, Mozambique dismissed South Africa 7-4 as Zambia outwitted Tunisia 4-2. Today, Monday, in Group B ties, Egypt faced Angola as Morocco play Libya. Moving on to athletics. Ethiopian Tesfaye Abera clocked 2 hours 6 minutes and 58 seconds to triumph at the Hamburg Marathon in Germany on Sunday. Kenyan Philmon Rono was runner-up ahead of Josphat Kiprono. Meanwhile, Meselek Melkamu covered the distance in 2 hours 21 minutes and 54 seconds to lead Meseret Hailu in a 1-2 Ethiopian dominance in the women's contest. Elsewhere, Duncan Mayo and Grace Momanyi carried the day at the Brighton Marathon in Britain on Sunday. Mayo retained his men's title in a winning time of 2 hours 9 minutes and 56 seconds. Momanyi prevailed in the women's race, courtesy of a 2 hours 34 minutes and 16 seconds effort. Meanwhile, Ethiopian Lelisa Desisa and Kenyan Caroline Rotich line up to defend their men's and women's titles at the Boston Marathon in Massachusetts States in the United States of America today, Monday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Armed groups from South Sudan conducted a cross-border raid, killing more than 140 people and kidnapping many children, Ethiopia's government said on Sunday. Ethiopian officials blamed Friday's attack near Gambela on ethnic Mule Gome. They said women and children were among those killed. A number of children were abducted and taken back to South Sudan. That's it for this Monday, April 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying have a lovely day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss the 2016 World Bank IMF Spring Meetings. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, transportation in Africa. What are the common ways of transportation? Are they convenient? Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing transportation in Africa. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.